Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Need another big third down conversion. Meyer looking to throw. Fires deep down the left side for Blythe, and he has the catch. Tiptoeing the sidelines. 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Todd Blythe, his fourth of the day.
Unbelievable.
All right, Cyclone Nation, welcome. December. We've reached December 2021. Unbelievable. But Meyer to Blythe podcast. I'm your host, Brett Meyer, joined, as always, by my man, Todd Blythe. Todd, how are you?
I'm doing well, Brett. How are you?
I'm doing great. And the main reason why, obviously not because you're here, but because we have a special guest joining us tonight. We have the turnaround king of Iowa high school football right now, a.k.a. Barry Alvarez, Dan McCarty, Mitch Moore. Coach Mitch Moore.
Coach Meyer, Coach Blythe, good to see you guys. How are we doing tonight?
Good to see you, brother.
Coach, do you like Meyer?
What's that?
Hey, first offer I got out was your young son. How about that? Can we bring that up first and foremost? Congratulations.
Absolutely. Thank congratulations you. To Brett Meyer on the birth Vince of his Meyer. Son.
Vince Meyer joined us last Monday at about 7:50 a.m.
Mitch, so Lil Vinny's gonna have his hand in the dirt though. That boy was born at what?
It was 9 pounds, 15 ounces, so almost 10 pounds. Tackle.
Absolutely. Three technique, knuckles in the dirt.
there'll be none of that. He will be, he'll be a skill player, most likely a quarterback. You know,
he'll be a thespian.
Hey, whatever you have, whatever passion you have, you better chase it and I'll support it. But no, it's been good, man. It's been good. I appreciate the, appreciate that, Mitch.
That's awesome.
Todd,
and
it's fun. It's diaper changes are different. I haven't been peed on yet, but mom got peed on. We have two other daughters, so changes are different now.
A little different.
Friendly fire coming in.
Gotta look out for the pee-pee now. No, it's been a whole different ball game.
I know. It's been awesome. But let's get into it because we've had
has anything happened in the last week football?
Nothing.
Anything going on?
It's you kind of see like trends and things change. And now the newest trend is, and I think it's due to the new recruiting calendar and having a signing day in December, as opposed to just traditionally in February, that schools are starting to fire coaches sooner and coaches are starting to move before their seasons are over. And we've seen that in the last week. You had two schools that fired early, and this is going to become a trend because I think they probably would be described as the schools that won the coaching hire season, if you will. And that's USC with Lincoln Riley and LSU Notre Dame, Brian Kelly. So, there's so many names out there right now, but, and Mitch, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on was kind of talk about, I mean, you're as plugged in cause you obviously coached at Iowa State and at Whitewater, and just there's a ton of coaches from the trees and the people that, you know, and now coach in high school and having coaches come through to recruit your players. Like, what is kind of the overall just kind of tenor of everything right now?
It really, like this week is starting to Monday, coaches coming through. it was, that's the first thing everybody talks about. I mean, this, how crazy this is and how, what kind of times we're going through right now with coaches leaving jobs and doing it this early and you're leaving kids in limbo. And I think it's just, everyone has the same sentiment. It's unfortunate. I don't know that there's a right answer, you know, what is the answer, but it's just, it's unfortunate situations for everybody that guys are leaving at this time in the year, especially when seasons aren't even done. You know, guys are leaving with their seasons aren't done. You always ask kids. I feel this no matter if you're at the same place or you go to different places. Every year it's a new leaf. There's a new culture. There's a new group leading. But I think you always preach to finish that season and finish the task you started. And you hate to see coaches, A, getting fired. How about the coaches that got fired in the Big 12? Texas Tech, they're winning games. TCU, they're winning games. And coaches are getting fired in the middle of the season. What are you teaching these young kids? You know, the guys that are making the fires and the guys that are hiring guys in the middle of the season. I think that overall, the sentiment, and that's bad for college football. You know, moving jobs and doing what's maybe best for your family or you've been in a place and you feel like you can go somewhere and get better. I think we'd all agree. You know, those are personal decisions that, you know, none of us are going to look at from the outside and to know all the answers to, but the way in which it's being done, I think, is the part that I think everybody says, this isn't, we got to find a better way to do it.
How much of that do you think is a problem with, social media? I mean, in the old days, a coach leaves and it's easy to, you get to control the release. You get a chance to sit down and talk to the players, explain the situation. This is what is best for my family at this moment, blah, blah, blah. And now, I mean, information is released, you know, by the second. And it's hard to keep, you know, nobody can keep wraps on things. Somebody's going to leak it to somebody. And even if it's not a media outlet in today's world, everybody's a media outlet. They throw it on Twitter, they throw it on Instagram. And in the span of, you know, 2 minutes, it's across the country. So from that, I mean, again, like you said, you feel bad for the kids because it seems like it's happening the wrong way, but I don't know how do you stop it.
Yeah. What is the right way? Right. But
yeah. I think most coaches probably in a weird way are glad that it's leaked on social media because it might take the edge off a little bit. Because if you're sure. Brian Kelly and you got to walk into, you just call a team meeting and nobody knows anything about it and you say you're leaving.
That's a good point.
A much harder conversation than.
Lets them off the hook a little bit.
Yeah. And some of the coaches, like, you know, Brian Kelly talked to his team for like 4 minutes and people made a deal. Like, what do you want to do? Sit there for an hour and take questions?
Exactly.
Like,
and I'm so sick of kids filming stuff that's not supposed to be filmed.
Yeah.
I don't know what you expect. It wasn't a great situation. He decided to leave. It got leaked. So he wasn't, you know, they didn't find out with him. It's not, you know, it's not good. But then I'm so sick of kids pulling up their phone and recording whether it's the Texas coach on the bus or this situation with Coach Kelly. That sucks. That stuff is supposed to be, that's family stuff, you know, but what do you do?
That doesn't exist anymore though. People film everything.
The
perspective though you brought up, I was just thinking about this is, you know, probably the three hardest days in my coaching career, you know, were not losses, but I remember leaving Whitewater and I had a really close knit group of receivers and we'd won our third national title in a row. And, you know, you're just, that's where I grew up, right? You know, that's where football became part of my life. Had to leave that group and having to do that at the time before social media, you know, it left a mark certainly on my coaching life and how to do that. So then you go to Greene County and I knew it wasn't going to be there forever, but you never know when that situation is going to happen. And then of course at Roosevelt, which was really hard, you know, but not having it a leak on social media and have to bring the guys in and have to talk to them or have to do it a certain way. I think that helped the relationship with the guys that I left because I did it that way. You know, there wasn't animosity. So I think some coaches probably do it that way. Brian Kelly, I don't know if he seems like a guy that would do it. Yeah, I don't know him, but I just, those 3 days for me as a coach, man, I look back on that probably the hardest 3 days of my coaching career. But I also feel like I did have some closure because I left with, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is the why. And, you know,
you felt like you did it the right way.
Yeah. You know, whether it was, again, what is the right way, but you felt like you had some kids.
Yeah. And I can tell you this, I mean, those hard conversations and that the fact that you know, feel that those emotional, you know, ties and things, that's your own fault, because I worked for you for 2 years at Roosevelt, and I know the type of relationships that you build with the kids and with the, the assistant coaches and stuff. And I've said this on this podcast before. I've said it to anybody that'll listen to me. I think you're as good as anyone I've ever been around when it comes to building relationships, building a program, developing excitement around that program. And so those real relationships, that's something that you do as good as anyone I've ever seen in coaching across football, basketball, any sport at any level. Those conversations are, I'm sure, going to be hard for somebody that cares like you do. And I think it's similar to what we saw out of Coach Campbell on senior day. That's not normal to see a coach, react like that and be that emotional. And, you don't see it very often. I've seen it out of you. I've seen it out of Coach Campbell, and that's really where the list stops. And I've been around a lot of football and seen a lot of coaches. So that's just my two cents on the whole situation.
Yeah. I think the emotion that Coach Campbell showed is,
fake.
No, it was absolutely real. It was great to see. And it made kind of some national headlines, which I think it deserved, just transition into like some of the actual hires now. And, it looks like, I think his name's Marcus Freeman. I saw him. I think he was at the state title game this year. I saw him down the sidelines.
He was.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, obviously looking at the Southeast Polk kids, but.
Yeah. That's an interesting deal since the safety from Polk, Xavier, he had Notre Dame in his top three. He had kind of narrowed it down to, what was it, Ohio State, Notre Dame, and Iowa?
Yeah, I'm sure he probably still does. I would guess that Brian Kelly probably wasn't the reason why. But
no, and especially if they're going to keep him around and keep the OC, obviously he's a defensive player at the college level, but if they're going to keep the core of the recruiters, but then also the assistant coaches, I think that keeps a lot of their recruiting in place.
Notre Dame has important. They have the number four class in the country. They're sixth in the rankings right now. And essentially like Iowa, they could easily beat Michigan. So if that happens, and I think if Baylor beats Oklahoma State, which is basically like a toss-up game, like Notre Dame's in the playoff.
Yeah.
Yep.
And their coach left. That's what's – but I do understand.
And
like,
I think that's what's so crazy this year is in years past, guys go to different jobs and they go from a stepping stone job to the next level. This year it's different because we saw two guys leave blue blood programs. Those are destination jobs. In years past, you don't see guys leave those jobs voluntarily. They get fired a lot, but they don't leave them voluntarily to go take another job. And that happened twice this year with Brian Kelly and Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. So I think that's what makes this year. It's crazy every year, but I think that's what makes this year feel even stranger. And then obviously the fact that we have a hell of a head coach at Iowa State. And so he's on every list there is out there too.
Yeah. And you think about has anybody ever left Oklahoma or anybody ever left Notre Dame?
No, that's why they're so butthurt about it, which I love watching OU melt down right now and talk about, the president say, we would have liked a little bit more heads up. Yeah, us too, dickhead. Everybody in the Big 12 would have liked a little bit more heads up.
I promise you, every remaining Big 12 team and Bob Bowlesby and everybody is just, because Texas is a mess. Sark's, I don't think that's going to work out. He'll be gone after they start, 3-4 next year.
They're a four-win ball club in the SEC every year. Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley knows what's going on. His job got exponentially harder as soon as they made a jump to the SEC.
Yeah, but you're also getting 10-year guaranteed contracts, which I think these coaches have so much leverage now.
You can keep the lights on for a while if you're getting, $9-10 mil a year.
Yeah, that's some serious cheese right there. 10 million,
yes.
100 and whatever, north of 100 mil over 10 years.
You're seeing all the – it hasn't happened in Notre Dame yet, I don't think, and that's probably because they're going to keep, of who it looks like they're going to hire. Again, we're recording this on Wednesday night, so we're kind of getting info as we're doing this. But, Oklahoma is losing. I think so far they've lost their top, four, five-star kids, their top receiver, running back, and quarterback recruit. They have kids currently on the team. Mims, their top receiver, has come out and said he's entertaining the idea of entering the transfer portal. Guys are jumping ship from recruits to their current stars on the team. Spencer Rattler's already gone. We knew that was going to happen regardless. You got to wonder if Caleb Williams is going to stick around. Does he decide he wants to move west? Who knows what's going to happen?
Did you see that? The kids were telling me at Waste tonight that he took OU quarterback off his Twitter handle.
Really?
Caleb Williams did?
Yeah. that was their. That,
see,
yeah,
you're more plugged in than anybody because you got a bunch of teenagers that live on social media that are following this stuff
all day and just sit around and talk about it. But it was funny because Brett, you brought this up. You're like, man, I don't know if Xavier's going to Notre Dame for Kelly. And I agreed with you. But the sentiment would be different for the Oklahoma. Think about all the guys at USC that have flipped their commitment to USC for the coach. So you've got two different, and I think that's probably an indication of how those two programs run. Notre Dame was run by a bunch of people in a certain way. And he's probably hoping to do that at LSU. Whereas I think Riley in Oklahoma, I think a lot of that juice did come from him and his personality and what he brought to that program. I think they both do it different ways, but I would agree with you. Were kids coming to, were they coming to Notre Dame for necessarily Brian Kelly? I don't know. I think you're coming for the prestige and you're coming for all the other things that Notre Dame's bring with you. I don't know if you're necessarily coming for Brian Kelly. Now,
from the stories we hear, I would say probably not.
Well, I think when you're,
The more stories that come out about Coach Kelly, he's not a great. Doesn't sound like he's a great guy. And again, I mean, none of us know him personally. Yeah, who knows?
He just comes off as very, chin up, kind of smug, I guess if you will.
Arrogant.
But yeah, and I think the those coaches. He's 60 years old. I mean, Ferentz is what, 60 some years old. Lincoln Riley's 38. Matt Campbell's 42. A lot of these younger coaches are going to be much more tuned in to recruiting.
Yep.
The game has changed.
Recruiting's changed. And I think they're going to be on the road recruiting and be the face of the recruiting more. Whereas, Brian Kelly's smart and goes and gets somebody like a Marcus Freeman and promotes Tommy Rees. And
yeah,
those guys are the face of your recruiting. And then, he comes in and closes the deal. And I'm sure that's probably what somebody like a Ferentz does. And he's probably not out there maybe he is, but he's probably reached the status and where he doesn't have to do that, where some of these younger coaches do. And I agree with you 100%, Mitch. And, Notre Dame is taking a big gamble on first time head coach, but similar to what we did in basketball, like hire the guy that gets the guys and look how that worked out. Right. TJ brought in Niang and Monte and all those guys. And, Marcus, you look at all the recruits that probably are Notre Dame probably won't lose a recruit now.
No.
And you think about it. We talked about this a little bit before we hit record tonight we all wondered and we're surprised a little bit that Notre Dame, a blue blood with that kind of history and probably, I mean, who knows, this is just my perception of Notre Dame, but probably a more old school mentality and kind of how they run things than, even other blue blood programs. Would they be okay hiring a 35 year old first time head coach at Notre Dame? And that was one of the reasons we didn't hire TJ the first time around for basketball at Iowa State. It basically got shut down. They said, well, he doesn't have any head coaching experience. And that was at Iowa State. Now, granted, we have a good basketball program historically, but it's not, Notre Dame football good. And that's surprising to me that they've decided to go that route. And I think it's just been, basically the groundswell of support that guy has got from the current players, the alumni, the recruits. Anybody that knows him seems to be like they're standing on a table and saying, this is a guy we need to have.
Yeah, I agree. And it's, you got to give props to the AD who's probably saying, hey, we've got to go in a polar opposite direction, maybe of what we had and create another way to sell our head coach, sell the head coach and sell somebody that's going to be in front of our program. But and the other part about Brian Kelly is LSU. And Brett, you might've brought this up earlier this afternoon is, people grow up in that state and you're going to go to LSU. I mean, like if you get an opportunity to go there, you're going to go there. It doesn't, whether it's Orgeron or whether it's Kelly or whether it's whoever was coaching there, you grow up in that state of LSU and people want to play football. The best players in the state want to play there.
That's what Texas used to be.
That's how, yeah, right. It'll be interesting, even looking at the West standings today in the SEC. And I know it, but it never shocks you. You look at that thing, you're like, holy cow, there's six teams in there and beat anybody in the country on any given day, and one half of the country.
Yeah, absolutely loaded. And
that's why Lincoln Riley said, I don't really want to do that year in and year out. I'm going to go to the Pac-12 who's, I don't want to say garbage, but they're not,
No, but I got to play California.
They're not as bad as the Big Ten, but
yeah.
If he gets so, OU had three of the, I saw this stat today. OU had three of the top seven players in the state of California committed, all five-star guys. Yes. And the other remaining four were uncommitted. I know a couple of those guys have already flipped to SC, like, and the rest of them will. So like when Pete Carroll had obviously USC rolling, California was on lockdown. Reggie Bush, locked that liner. It doesn't matter. Everybody. They wouldn't go down to Florida and get the top linebacker, Keith Rivers. It didn't matter who it was. Like, they were going to SC. And now, like, Lincoln's going to do, he's going to lock down Southern California.
Yeah, and that's the power of personality as a head coach, and or maybe not a head coach, but as a recruiter. But you look what happened to SC. It looked like they're a dynasty that would run for, you know, 20, 30 years, and Pete Carroll goes to the NFL, and they, I mean, quickly they fell off. And God, I would love that to happen to Oklahoma. I don't know if it will. But you see, USC was smart enough to say, you know what, we need that dynamic personality in the big office, and they went and got it with Lincoln Riley. And it looked he was looking to shop himself. I don't think he was consulted very much on the move to the SEC. So
now Oklahoma is going to have a rude awakening, because their new normal is going to be, you know, if they get the right schedule breaks, and who knows how they're going to divvy up the divisions. I mean, you know, they're 8, 7, 8, 9 wins. That's going to be a good year sometimes.
Yeah,
and every year 10, 11 win. Yeah, I mean,
and I get it's money. Money talks. It's all about money. But I mean, damn, did they have a really good in the Big 12? I mean, they were the team in the Big 12. Texas was a big brand name, but they were, you know, not the program that Oklahoma is, at least currently. But God, I just, outside of just saying, yeah, we're going to get a huge check every year. I mean, for the longevity of actually having a winning program, that move does not make sense to me.
Well, dirty little secret, right? I mean, think about dating back to like the old Big Eight days. Why do you think Nebraska and Oklahoma have so many titles? It was the conference was weak. It was them.
That's all it was.
And look what happened to those. Look what happened to Nebraska when they went to the Big Ten.
Oh, realignment does not work for, I mean, I'd say the only school that's come out ahead in realignment maybe is, you know, recruiting wise and maybe like an A&M, like Texas A&M. Has raised their profile, but the reason why they went was because they wanted an advantage over Texas that's gone now. Mm-hmm. So like realignment, like ask a Nebraska fan, ask a Missouri fan. Mitch, we talked about this today. Missouri,
Colorado went to the Pac-12, which isn't a good conference.
You don't hear about those schools.
No, they're nothing.
Yeah, you don't play in college.
Non-existent.
Mitch, when we played in college, Todd, you know this. We played against Missouri. Like, they had some dogs. They were good. You know, Brad Smith, Chase Daniel, Witherspoon, Jeremy Macklin. Those tight ends they had. They were putting guys in the NFL. They were, you know, they could recruit Texas. They used to make a killing in Texas.
Yep.
And now they're completely just an afterthought. I mean, they're complete afterthought. Same thing with Nebraska. Obviously, we know their struggles. Colorado. I mean, Rutgers, like, give me a break. Realignment does not work for these schools, but they're cashing checks. And obviously that's what it's about, but it'll be interesting to see. I mean, OU and Texas, good luck. And, you know, I don't blame Lincoln Riley at all. I don't blame Brian Kelly at all.
No, and that's the thing I think that gets lost. Both those guys are getting shit on a lot. But if they decided, sat down, talked to their family, the ones closest to them that they, you know, got to look in the eye every night when they come home, and decided this is what's best for our family and for me and my career, then go for it. Then make the move. Like, I'm never going to say somebody, you know, unless Matt Campbell leaves, but I'm never going to say somebody made the wrong decision for them personally. It's just unfortunate how things play out. And again, I don't necessarily think it's, you know, Lincoln Riley's fault or Brian Kelly's fault, how things played out in the media with social media. I'm sure they didn't leak it.
Right. So
it's not necessarily their fault, but it is. I mean, it's unfortunate for, you know, a group of 105 or 115, you know, 18 to 22 year olds that got to find out on social media. And from what I've heard, there were some assistant coaches that were sitting in living rooms when it came across the bottom line on ESPN. That's tough.
Jeez. Well, I was just saying, I mean, we're walking out of the game, the TCU game. The game's not over. Iowa State the other night, and TCU's naming their head coach. I'm like, this makes no sense. Why would you do it at this time? How does that happen?
Probably have to. They know it'll get leaked. If they want to control the story at all, they got to be the first to let it go. Yeah.
I think the agents basically run the show. Like,
there's no question.
I mean, the same agent represents basically, like, I think that was Jamie Pollard on his interview today was talking about, he did an interview on Cakes and was talking about how the agents will represent the coaches getting fired. and then represent the coach that they're hiring. They'll get paid on the buyout, and then they'll obviously get paid on the new deal. And it's just like, what do you do if you're an AD? Because, you know, your job relies on this coach. That's probably why, like, you know, the Notre Dame gig, this AD has, he's like regarded as one of the best in the country, and he has standing at his university. Like, he can take a risk on a first-time head coach.
Yeah, he's got some political capital at the school.
Yeah, he can do that.
Kind of like how Jamie would be at Iowa State, where he's made enough great decisions and built himself up where he can take a risk on a TJ this time around. You know, because it's not like TJ was, you know, blowing the doors off people at UNLV, but he's come in and our, you know, basketball team is undefeated. They won by 30 or so tonight. And that looks like a good hire now, but there were a lot of people that didn't like it when it first happened. But another thing I wanted to touch on tonight, and Mitch, you can speak on this, is something that gets lost in all of this is there's a lot of people that are involved in a football program that aren't making $4, 5, 6 million like the head coach. Time a head coach gets fired or a head coach leaves somewhere, there's assistant coaches, there's, you know, GAs, because guys want to bring their own GAs in. There's support staff and families that are now, you know, if they're lucky enough to move on with the coach, great. But there's a whole group of people that get lost and aren't talked about in the media that are now in limbo about what's going to happen in their lives. So, I mean, Mitch, you kind of went through this with Coach Rhodes going to Campbell. So talk about that a little bit.
You know, a couple times I went through it as a player. I was at Whitewater. We lost our coach right before I was a senior. And so I saw that with some of the GAs and some of the young coaches, especially the Division III world. And then at Iowa State, I was there with Coach Rhodes and then stayed with Coach Campbell. So I saw, you know, and this isn't easy on either side. And Coach Campbell would be the first to tell you 6 years ago when he was letting guys go that he didn't really know that he knew were good men and had good families and had good kids. You know, like, that's not an enjoyable experience for him, but he just trusted in his process and knew he was going to bring the right people in. But it is. It's a situation that's, you know, the head coach makes a lot of money. Coordinators make really good money. Even some of your position coaches don't make enough money to be fired for 6 months of the year, or 8 months of the year, and not have another job that would ever equate to what they're making. I mean, so it is, you put a lot of families, in limbo and stress, especially in that world, because almost every family revolves around the coach in that family. I mean, and I know that sounds, it's just reality. At the Division I world, your life, your vacations, your family, holidays, your birthday, it revolves around what's going on in the coach's lives. And so, you know, when they get fired, it's your whole life going, holy cow, we got to take another direction here. And then when Coach Kelly gets hired today, I was thinking that. So he surely had to consult his guys and go, hey, we're going to take this LSU job. Are you coming with me? I know Coach Campbell would never take a job without talking to his guys. I mean, just working with him, I know his loyalty and trust. I'd never have at the high school level. Not 1 second would I do it without talking to my guys first. Hey, is this something that we could? So isn't that interesting how that all went down with Coach Kelly and then the coordinators stay? I mean, where did the trust get lost there? Was he not going to take him? But, you know, back to your first question, Todd, or whatever, in reference to that, it really is. There's a lot more people that get affected than just the big names that are calling the plays or running the show. And it's unfortunate. And people do make good money at that level. And so I'm not here feeling sorry for some of those people, but there are people that just make a good living and they're out of a job and they can't turn around and get a job the next week in that field. That's just not how it works.
That's the thing is coaching is that there's a finite number of jobs.
Yes.
A very finite number of jobs. And I mean, I was a college football coach for a number of years. At that point, like college football coaches, you know this, I mean, you're a coach by trade. Like we can't do other shit a lot of times. Like I was fortunate to be able to switch
careers.
I can't
change a light bulb in my
exactly. I was fortunate enough to be able to switch careers and I was young enough to make it work and you know, get in a good spot and all that. But you know, somebody who's been a lifer, you know, who you're looking at a guy who's not ready to retire. They're, you know, 45, 50 years old. They've been a coach their entire life. They can't go plug themselves into the corporate world. I guarantee you it wouldn't happen. It wouldn't work. There's a limited number of jobs out there that work. And yeah, those guys, I mean, you were at the D1 level, position coaches are making a couple hundred thousand dollars. They, you know, they can keep the lights on for a while if they need to.
Sure.
this happens at every level. That's the thing.
Every level.
It talked about at D1AA or at the D2 level. You know, it happens less as far as firings probably at that level, but D1AA is, you know, as ruthless as anywhere. And I mean, I can speak from personal experience.
The pay is terrible.
The pay for like position coaches sucks. So I do, you know, just want to bring that up. That's something that gets lost in the shuffle, I think, a lot of times with all this, that's you know, that's tough on those families and those coaches. So I trust this though,
you know, guys, and going back to Coach Campbell is what I can almost assure you is that he's doing an unbelievable job of communicating with his staff on all these things. And he doesn't have an agent. He doesn't, you know, he's just doing all the speculation. He's got his head down and he's probably recruiting for Iowa State no matter what, you know, and he
doesn't have an agent. That's crazy.
He doesn't have an agent. No, he doesn't have an agent. And so, I know this from experience too. He'll go through times he doesn't answer his phone or text or whatever. And so, you know, most of the stuff that is out there on the internet, there's no way that there's any truth to it because he didn't give an answer to that, you know, and that's just, there's no truth to it because he hadn't said a word. He hasn't
picked up the phone in 48 hours.
He hasn't picked up the phone. No, he's not. So it is what a week though for college football and all that stuff. I mean, I don't think it necessarily sheds a great light on how we're doing it. You know, I mean, I think it something's got to be different.
Yeah,
the money is insane. I mean, the money has gotten to a point now. I don't know if it's even possible to salary cap coaches, but I mean, there were rumors of Brian Kelly got offered $15 million a year. I don't know what it ended up being his actual salary there, but I mean, you're paying a guy to coach football, to coach a kid's game. And I love football as much as anybody. I coached it, Mitch, you know, you're a head coach, but you're paying somebody to coach football, you know, 10, 12, $15 million a year. That's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. When there's other things that money could go to, I mean, I get it. Pam is the highest paid person in the university that I'm all on board for that. Yeah. But there comes a point when there's other things that need financial help. Yeah.
And I get like a football program at that level brings in, you know, tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, a year to the university. So I get that part of it, but God dang, like college coaches are working 120 hours a week. They don't have the time to spend any money anyway.
They're not spending money on anything. Yeah. Other than their house.
Yeah, exactly. Or in the case of Lincoln Riley at USC, they bought him a $6 million house. So that's a nice little bump.
And paid off and bought both of his houses for $500,000 more than asking price.
Jeez, just finding ways to get him little bonuses.
$1 million because he was building
little bonuses,
house.
Bonuses.
Yeah.
And that was he was building another house there.
Yeah. He was building another house. Yeah. So
they bought both of them for $500,000 over asking. So that was an extra $1 million in his pocket for both those. And then bought him a $6 million house in LA. And then also gave he and his family unlimited access to a private
365. Jet. Yeah. Think about the timeline there though, guys. Like at some point him and his wife, I hope they sat down and said, "Hey, are we going to start digging a hole for this house?" Yeah, cool. We're going to be here for a while. Well, that wasn't very long ago.
They started digging before they made the SEC.
I mean, these converts, you know how this works, right? The agents are back channeling everything and they're talking to the clients. Like, hey,
yes, this didn't happen overnight. This was in the works.
He may not have like officially talked to USC, but contract is in front of him. Deal's in place. You're our guy. So he's known for a while. I would just, you have to assume that they know. Same thing with Brian Kelly. It's like, as soon as.
Even if they weren't participating, you know, they gave their agent the okay to go talk to these schools, and the agent was dealing and doing everything they need to do. And then once it got finalized, it got slid in front of the coach, and they said, "Okay, yep, I'm on board." So,
yeah.
So how great is it? Anybody trying to get a hold of Campbell, nobody can.
Oh my god! I know, that's what's killing me. Is like, it's just, I mean, it's just, he's gone. Not best. That he's ever on social media, but he's just been completely dark for the past 72 hours.
How many
it's
agents?
Like, come on, awesome. Give us something.
How many agents do you think call him and want to get a hold of him and want to sign
all of them? All of the agents.
All of them. All of them. Yep. Oh man.
Yeah, it's been wild. I mean, it's been a crazy year of college football just as a whole. I mean, do we want to talk about that a little bit? We want to talk about just kind of recap Iowa State's season now that the regular season is in the books.
And let's look at the conference title games. What do you guys think is going to happen?
I don't know.
I mean, SEC, I think Georgia wins. They're
I'm an Alabama train. They're beating
I think
them.
So too. And I think so. What does that do if Alabama wins? They're one loss team. They're in. They're in the Final Four. In. Does they're Georgia stay Georgia's in as a one loss?
Yeah, Georgia
okay. have to.
Cincinnati, I mean, they're going to be in unless I mean I don't know what they have left, but
they play Houston.
Yeah, they play Houston's okay. ranked.
Our boy Dana will dial him up. Holgorsen, he's the head coach there. They could be, they're going to have just many athletes. The game I'm intrigued about is, I mean, obviously, ACC, who cares? The Big Ten game is going to be. Did you
I
see
think,
the quote?
I think Michigan will run away. I think Michigan will run away with that thing. I think Michigan, for the first time since Harbaugh has been there, I've been the first one to call them frauds every single year. I think for the first time,
they're for real.
A legit football team. Yeah.
Did you see the quote? I saw this on Twitter today from the Iowa quarterback, number 7.
Oh, yeah.
He goes, he said it's like Michigan's pass rush. He wanted to compliment him, but he was like, he said it's not like a Big 12 game where you can just sit back there. I'm thinking to myself.
You can't be garbage and throw shade. Like, sorry.
We win in spite of you. You are you suck. Like, come on.
And I saw somebody else like commented on the tweet or something. He's only been sacked. Like more times than Iowa State did one time. So it was one Big 12 experience. He got rushed as hard as anybody that they faced this year.
I mean, the guy completes like 50% of his passes.
Yeah. Brett, we talk about this. We try and stay away from like talking bad about these 20-year-old kids, but he's garbage.
He came after the Big 12.
Exactly.
No, whatever. I'm sure he's a good
probably
kid.
A very nice kid, but
struggles. I think
that's not what.
But have an idea of what you're talking about. Like five, you know, six, seven, 8 years ago, Big 12, that was probably the case. Big 12 was all about offense. There wasn't a lot of defense.
Oklahoma State's got
a great
defense.
That's not the case anymore.
We've at times had a great defense. Like it's not no. That's a tired, lazy take, but I don't know. Michigan, that was a big deal for them to beat Ohio State. So they're going
to, I was happy to see that. And for no other reason that keeps that rivalry relevant. Cause it was getting to the point. It's like, you can't call it the big game anymore.
The game.
Because it's been eight years since Michigan won. So
It'll be a good game. I think Michigan's a better team, but.
You know, they are. I think even in that game, they proved it. Michigan's a good football team. And Harbaugh, he's done it. What, he went 11 his first year there, I think. I mean, he really hasn't, other than meeting Ohio State, he hasn't won one big game a year against a ranked team in the top 10. It's not like he's had bad records there other than 1 year, right?
No, they'd be, I mean.
Well, he plays in a shit conference. The Big Ten stinks. I know you live in Iowa City and talk to have contact with the Iowa staff. So you got to be careful. Probably,
there's too much imbalance.
And they don't listen to this podcast. I can
They're not listening to the Blythe to Meyer. They got beat by this too many times and they're not listening.
Yeah, right. The schedule in the Big Ten always cracking. Nebraska this year played Ohio State. They played Michigan State. They played Michigan. Iowa.
So their schedule was hard.
At a conference, Oklahoma. Like it was. And you look at, Iowa's schedule, they won the games, whatever, but that's why they're not even, it doesn't matter if they win. They're like, you're not getting the playoffs. Doesn't matter.
Somebody needs to fact check me on this, but I heard this the other day. So Nebraska lost, what did they lose? 9 games this year? The 3-9?
9 games by one. Every loss was by one score or less.
Yes. It was single digit losses all the way across the board. But from somebody told me this, and again, fact check me, please. Because I'm not going to do the research myself, but their point differential was even. They lost 9 games, and because all of their losses were so close, that their point differential was even across the board as a 9-loss team.
That's unbelievable, but it makes sense.
It makes sense. I mean, if they won their 3 games by, a couple of scores apiece, playing cupcakes at the beginning of the year, and then all 9 losses are by single digits or one score, that's very, could very easily be true. Even if it's not completely even, it's got to be close. And God, they were so close in so many games.
Yeah, they were.
I really wanted them to pull out that Iowa game.
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, there were some programs who have waited on their coaches and got rewarded, like, Harbaugh.
Yeah.
And Nebraska was better this year. Like they just got to find a quarterback that doesn't turn the ball over and cost them so much. And but Scott Frost too, like, even in, I watched a little bit of the Iowa game. It's like, you're backed up. Iowa's got momentum. Freshman quarterback drops back. Intentional grounding, end zone, safety. It's like, what are you doing? Run the ball and kick. Like little stuff like that, you would think a coach who's
And he's been a great offensive mind. I mean, what he did at Oregon, what he did at UCF. It's not like he's a brand new, he's a new head coach. Well, I mean, he was a head coach at UCF, but I mean, he's been coaching ball for a long time. That's
yeah, but this is UCF has, you know, they were built to win.
They were national champs in 2017 or whatever.
This is,
didn't they put up a banner or something?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Banner's up.
God. But I mean, Nebraska fired their entire offensive staff. You go on their website and look at their staff. There's nobody on offense.
So who's coaching offense for them?
GAs. I mean, the ops guys are on the field running indo drills with the running backs. I don't know. I mean, you got to figure
out guy wise running the, running indos with receivers.
I mean, I'm sure Frost is taking quarterbacks and probably taking receivers and doing joint stuff. But I mean, so is there a O-line GA that's taking the O-line? It's an awfully important position to give to a, 26-year-old, 27-year-old guy that's getting started in coaching.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I don't know how that's
preparation. I don't know. Yeah, I don't either.
Probably just meet as a segment, meet as a whole offense, and let Frost run the show. But yeah, that's I don't know. I'd be interested to hear how that has run the last few weeks since they fired their entire staff.
Unbelievable. Me too. I can't imagine them doing it.
What they do with Frost's his contract? They cut it by $1 million for next year, and then also cut his buyout in half so they can fire him for cheap. Is that?
Essentially, he's got 1 year, and then that's what they're going to reevaluate after 1 year. So then what do you do? You're four games in, and you're 1-3. Is he out? I mean, there you are. You're hopefully by game six, we're 4-2. If not, guys, we'll just be hanging out here the next five games.
Yeah, that's. Jeez. I don't know. I've done a full 180 on Nebraska from hoping they lose every game to now I'm to the point where it's like, man, like I almost hope they start winning games because they don't play in the Big 12. So I really don't care. And it's almost to the point where it's, embarrassing a little bit.
How can this historic of a program be this bad? Cause when Nebraska's good, it's good for college football. 2:30 on Saturday. You want to watch Nebraska in a sold out Lincoln Memorial.
At least I want to see them beat Iowa.
I mean, just,
I mean, one win a year I'm really rooting for. So, but yeah, Mitch, tell me, Brett and I have talked throughout the season about Iowa State football. What do you think? What were your thoughts? What were your expectations at the end of the year? What were your thoughts on the season?
I got to watch a couple games in person and watched everyone on at least TV. And I thought Breece Hall, that last game, that's what sticks out to me. I think we'll always will with this season. Just, what an incredible player, hope he comes back, or really hope for him. He does whatever's best for him, but what an incredible football player. And to follow David Montgomery, I still got visions of Montgomery, his first day on campus, running sprints with the younger kids that got in there. And you're like, holy cow, he was violent. He had such good body control, and Breece coming in and then can do all that stuff with great pace and vision and speed in the open field. I mean, he's in it. To me, he's one of those backs. You see him, and you're like, he's as pretty as advertised. He does everything well. He's smooth. He catches the ball. I know we overuse the word elite, at least the guy up in Minnesota does, but he's elite. he's absolutely an elite back. So I thought that part was fun. And then to watch an offense in the last 5 to 6 years, I think tight ends have been so integral in not only the NFL, but what we do offensively, schemes with our personnel in college. And to have the number of tight ends and the greatest tight end in probably Iowa State history, just to watch that this year. And I know we didn't win as many games as we all wanted to, but they did some really efficient things. They had some really good players. It was fun to watch offensively. And then, defensively, I think the scheme just continues to evolve. It's one of the best schemes in football right now. So many people watch it from afar. So many people watch Iowa State football, even in terms of cutups, in the coaching profession. So it's fun to watch it when you're watching it live, because you're watching a defense that's really developing week after week, year after year, into maybe the best defense schematically in all of football. So I think from that standpoint, taking it from my standpoint as a coach in a profession, they're just such a fun team to watch. You've got electric players offensively. Coach Manning and obviously Coach Campbell do a terrific job offensively with just manipulating defenses. And then you've got Coach Haycock, who does such a great job with his schemes and his schematics. And were we overmatched at times with teams that were probably better than us top 22. I suppose that's right. But I think as a Cyclone fan with these guys at the helm, we can be in every football game that they're ever coaching because they're that good at what they do. So that's just fun for, you know, for all of us, for the three of us who know football the way we do, watching Iowa State football with these guys here is so fascinating, right? Cause it's just, you're going to see something new every Saturday. You're going to see something, where they've really game planned and beat the opponent schematically, you know? I mean, so it's just, it's a fun program to watch, you know, from that standpoint. But, you know, Chris Williams said something about this the other day, how he just, it's an end of an era. You feel like, holy cow, there's this group as well. When Niang left, it was when Pfizer and Tinsley left in 01. It was when you guys left. I mean, there's just an era when you watch kids develop for 3 or 4 years. And I talk about this with my team is, you know, you develop and you love kids because of some of the struggle. And so we did get to see some of these guys and go through some of their struggle, but man, did we see some of their triumphs and victories too, that were really, really fun for all of us. But at the end of that game, I was leaving and thinking about what a performance Brees was. And, you know, we'll never get to see Brock Purdy again in an Iowa State uniform. Like, God damn, man, what a player. What a special kid.
It's crazy. Man, it feels like he's been there for 10 years. I mean, we've been watching him for 4, but it feels like a lot longer. Yeah, I mean, you get invested in these kids' stories when you watch them play for that long.
Go ahead. I got a sense from the guys who, like, you know, Brock and Charlie Kohler and Brees. Like, if Brees comes back to school, like, I'm gonna go look him up and, like, hey, please go to the NFL. Like, he doesn't, he shouldn't carry the ball for free again.
And between the three of us, he doesn't need a bowl game either.
No, he didn't. No, absolutely not. I don't want to play a bowl game either. But I think there was a sense of, like, they were proud of, like, hey, man, like, when we got here, our program was, you know, in a tough spot and we left. Like, we're established and we're a program that people recognize and respect. And that to me is, like, the most, like, leave it better than you found it. And those guys absolutely did. So, for me, the way I look at it is, you know, like, I love, like, one of my favorite things to do is when NCAA tournament time comes around and Iowa State is in the mix. That's why last year it was miserable. Yep. Hated basketball.
But you love it.
And this year it's like, I'm in. I want to know, like, I want to get to know who our guys are, where they're from. I want to learn about them. And, like, we're in the mix. We're 7-0, top 20. And that's kind of where we are with football now. Every year we're in the mix. We're talked about.
Yep.
Like, this year some people picked us in the playoff, maybe a little bit overrated, but coming off what we had last year with the guys coming back, it made a lot of sense. But we're in the mix. We're in the conversation. And that, to me, that's a sign of a program that has an unbelievable foundation. And, you know, these guys that just, you know, that's probably one of the reasons why Coach Campbell was emotional on senior days, because he knows that. Like, he knows how important those guys were. And, like, we're going to sign a top 20 class this year. So we're not going anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, this year it was disappointing, but damn it, it was fun. I mean, so many people, I mean, just as a fan now, I mean, Brett and I, you know, we don't coach. We certainly can't play anymore. Those days are long past. So we're simply fans at this point. And to just be sitting there on Saturday and watch a game either in the stadium or from my couch and watch it on TV. I mean, I'm still so invested with every snap, every down out there because of where this program is, I mean, it was just so much fun this year. And yeah, we were sad. We were disappointed on certain Saturdays, but it was just a lot of fun. And I think the basketball team's getting back there, but to your point, when you're competitive and when you're in the hunt for something bigger than just what's happening that day, that's when it really gets, it gets to be a lot of fun just to be a fan. So, real quick, before we get out of here, Mitch, I appreciate you coming on tonight, man. I want you to talk about, you know, just what's going on at City High in Iowa City. I got a chance to see you up close and personal and work under you for 2 years at Roosevelt. So I know what it's like. I've said it on the podcast. I've said it to anybody that'll listen, what I think of you as a head coach and a leader of men. But yeah, you just give us your, I know high school coaches don't recruit, but, you know, hypothetically,
give us your recruiting pitch.
Yeah. Hypothetically, give us your pitch.
Well, I'll give you why City High.
City High. Yep.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it, Coach. And it was, like I said earlier, it's always hard leaving a place, especially a place like Roosevelt with those kids and the families in that community. But
you know, getting a chance to come to City High, move my family and come to this place, it started just you and I, all of us, well, the three of us growing up, when you knew high school football, it was Iowa City High. It's just there's a prestigious pageantry around this place, the east side of Iowa City, the importance of athletics intermixed with the high school. And so, you know, when I came here, the program had been down a little bit and hadn't won some games for a while. And it was really just needed some new life, needed some new energy. There was a bunch of winners here, a bunch of great kids, big senior class. And, we had a fantastic year. And so I think the story behind it is we did it with two quarterbacks who were sophomores who had never taken a snap at quarterback in their lives. We did it with multi-sport athletes. You know, we've got one of the best wrestlers in the country who's now one of the best football players probably in the country coming back. We've got a guy who's going to play shortstop at Iowa, Dan Gable's nephew, and Gable Mitchell. We've got just a bunch of multi-sport guys that play basketball, guys that run track. And the big selling point was like, let's just continue to grow with this class and play sports and get all your buddies out for football and let's make it fun. And it happened real fast. Of course, it doesn't happen. I've got an unbelievable group of assistant coaches, Coach McGackey, Coach Blythe, you coached with, and Coach McKim, who I coached with at Iowa State. He actually coached at Oklahoma for a couple of years, coached at Lewis Central, where Max Duggan, now the quarterback at TCU, he coached him in high school. So I've got just a really good Jordan Harris, former Iowa State Cyclone. He's our linebackers coach. Just so I've got to, again, put together a really unique group of staff who does an unbelievable job of relating to kids. And then of course you win games because you've got really good football players. I mean, we developed them fast, but they were good athletes and we ended up going to the semifinals. So it was an awesome year for our guys, awesome year for our program. And it's such a reminder, guys. But, and I know you, Meyer, you got inducted in the Hall of Fame. And I just remember there, you sitting there talking to your high school coaches and just how proud they were of you. Right. And how much winning that state title, what it did to, you know, the community Atlantic. And I you further get reminded of that this year is the community. It was so special to see the fans fill Bates Field, you know, to see hundreds of young kids at our games as we lined, you know, took the stairs to come down to go to the grocery stores and go get ice cream on Thursday nights and, you know, and have 10, 15 people come up to you and more importantly, come up to the kids and just thank them and be proud of them. And it energizes when football is good in a school, it energizes a community. And it does, I've now been at three different places where it's had the opportunity to do that. And this place, you know, going to the dome and going to that, you know, the place that everybody wants to be, it brought so much joy to the kids, so much joy to the east side of Iowa City. It shows you how much bigger football is than just the Friday night. So it was fun, special season, you know, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Coach McCarney. You know, he's a former Little Hawk, also got put into the Hall of Fame with Brett. So that was a neat night to be at that. I know, Todd, you and I were there. That was awesome just to see those guys. But Coach McCarney, you know, he's the epitome of Little Hawk football. I mean, that's kind of what this place is like. And you guys know Coach McCarney. I mean, there's just so much history. There's so many people that are so involved. Coach McCarney would call me every Friday morning at 7:50. I mean, it was like clockwork. Towards the end, if I was doing anything at 7:50, I'd have to go, hey, I got to go do something because I knew Coach was going to call me. And, you know, it was just neat we brought his 50-year reunion back at the beginning of the year. But it was just neat to see the past kind of bridge with the present. And really, again, like I said, what high school football should bring to a community, we were able to at least provide quite a bit of that this year. And so hopefully the future is bright here. We're losing a bunch of seniors. We've got one of the best players in the country coming back, two sophomore quarterbacks. And so we'll get it rolling. The offseason's already started, Coach Blythe. You know how it is. I'm nice. I'm the nice guy during the season. I'm Coach Moore, man. Just got energy. I'm flying around. And the Monday after we lost, it was back to get your ass back to work. We got, you know, hey, this is a great, you got to hear this one before I go. So we go to Iowa wrestling meet the other day. And I know it's not the place to tell it, but we go down, we meet Coach Brands. And we're in the wrestling room. He looks at me and he goes, ain't freaking good enough, was it? Ain't freaking good enough. That's the first thing he says to me. Just shakes my hand and goes, ain't good enough, was it? And he goes, you know, you got work to do. And I'm like, God, you know, I love that. Wasn't it awesome? Like 1,000 people sit there and tell you, hey, great job. And it was fact. What we did was awesome. It was remarkable. He looks at me in the eyes. He goes, ain't good enough, was it?
Elite competitors are all wired the same way.
Yes.
I love it. It was awesome. Yeah, so
no, I mean, I can tell you, man, it was fun to follow Iowa City's City High's journey this year. I mean, obviously, again, I said a couple of times, I got to work for you for 2 years at Roosevelt. And I know what you bring to a program, what you bring to a community. So it was fun. You know, congratulations on all the success. I expect more next year. I expect at least one more game out of you guys next year.
It ain't good enough, right? It ain't good enough.
Exactly.
That's a great story. You can see why coaches who are at the top stay there.
Like, Mitch, I know you want to be at City High for a long time and they want to keep you, but I'd be lying if I said I wouldn't love the idea of seeing you in Cardinal and Gold with a headset sometime in Jack Trice. So that's what I think of you, as a person to coach. That'd be fun.
I think at this point, mainly because
I want sideline passes.
Yeah, you just want sideline passes. At this point, this is my new thing, though, is at this point, the next time I move, my wife's staying here, and I'm not going to leave these guys because, that's the hard part of the coaching world is you're just moving your family. And that, another place that makes City great is just, it's a great place to raise a family here. And I know it's just too much nice talk about Iowa City.
Well, I think we'll go ahead and wrap it there, but no, Mitch, thanks for coming on tonight, man. That was so much fun.
I appreciate you guys as always. Coach Blythe, Coach Meyer. Good to see you. Good to hear from you.
Good to see you too, brother. We'll talk soon.
All right.
See you guys. Yeah.